Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. You like that music, that fiddle music? I kind of do, and it's a big part of the latest Chloe Ellefson mystery book that author Kathleen Ernst has come out with. It. Her book is called Fiddling with Fate. That's the title. It's number 10 in the Chloe Ellefson mystery series, and it starts and ends in Stoughton, Wisconsin, but most of it takes place in Norway. I've had a chance to read it, really enjoyed it. I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing what she has to say about the book and about her series. And you may have some questions for her as we move along, maybe about the series itself or maybe just about writing. Love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen Ernst, welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here.
You know what? I almost said Chloe Ellefson.
Chloe.
Welcome.
You
Has
wouldn't
that ever
be
happened?
The first. It happens all the time. Yes,
it does?
It does.
Well, you kind of, in a way, you kind of are.
Well, Chloe has a lot in common with me in superficial ways, and so it's very easy for people to sort of conflate the two of us in our mind. We have the same job. Or she has the job that I used to have as a curator at Old World Wisconsin. She used to live in the farmhouse that I used to rent in LaGrange, things like that. So it is very easy. Yeah.
Well, tell us about the plot for Fiddling with Fate.
Well, this one is very exciting for me, and I think for readers as well. Chloe and Relke. Relke is the other main character, who is her fiancé and a police officer, get to travel to Norway. And the whole series has really been about cultural heritage in its many forms, how different people respond to their cultural heritage, what different ethnic groups brought to our state. And Chloe has reached a point by book 10 where she's a little more curious about her own family roots and the stories of her ancestors back in Norway. So she gets to go and do some exploring.
Yeah, it's interesting. You have them together the entire book. Sometimes that's not the case.
That's not the case, right. But they are engaged now, so I figured this would be a good opportunity for them to travel together. And actually, I hope that readers will be very pleased. They've both grown a lot, Chloe and Relke, over the years, individually and as a couple. And they travel well together, and they confront some challenges well together, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in this book, the relationship between mothers and daughters is a major theme. What are your thoughts on those relationships?
Well, I think it's a very powerful relationship for any woman. And if you were not fortunate enough to know your mother, then you have those questions and you wonder. And for someone like Chloe, she loved her mom, but she also had a challenging relationship with her mother. And her mother died young, and so there were some unresolved issues, and that left a lot of questions in Chloe's mind. And Chloe has always been very interested in women's history in particular, women who so often didn't have a strong voice in the past and didn't leave a lot of tangible records behind. So it seemed like a very good time for Chloe to learn more about her own roots after learning about so many other women over the course of the series. To sort of figure out, to start to get some shape in her mind to this chain of very strong women back in Norway, her mother's 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 back into time.
Great, great, great,
great. Great, 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 yeah.
Four greats. Grandmother.
Yeah, yeah.
So that goes back, excuse me, that goes back a long ways. It's one of the things I enjoy about the book because, all of your books for that matter, because you juxtapose the history with the present, almost the present day.
I have a lot of respect for historians who work so hard, but no matter how good a researcher someone is, there are always going to be gaps in the historical record. And when I worked for the State Historical Society, you know, that was always frustrating. I'd find a wonderful artifact in our collection at Old World, Wisconsin, and want to know who made it and how they felt about it. And often those records don't exist. So as a novelist, I get to fill in some of those gaps. And readers then get to experience vicariously things that happened centuries ago. And by the end of the book, readers often know a little bit more about the story than Chloe does, because Chloe mm-hmm. will always be limited by what she can discover.
We have lines open for you at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We've got a fiddle image now on our program notes, which is kind of nice. You can go to ideas@wpr.org and take a look at it. It's kind of cool. Well, and we're not giving anything away. As you mentioned, Chloe's mom dies when the book starts.
Right.
What was your thought process on that whole thing? Was it?
I wanted, you mean, why did I have Merritt die, her mom die? Because in real life, things don't always get resolved as neatly as we'd like with our loved ones. And I thought that, having Merritt pass away unexpectedly would propel Chloe into this new adventure. She had been wondering about how much to ask her mom, what she knew about her own past, and sort of dithering on that, and her sister and Chloe didn't always agree. And so this really strikes a chord for her. She realized she lost the chance to ask the questions that she wanted to ask. And it also gave me the chance, she discovers some artifacts, some family heirlooms hidden in her mother's closet that she never knew existed. And those become sort of a key to her finding her route back to her female ancestors.
And that Norwegian, what is it, Hardanger?
Hardanger, yeah.
Hardanger, is
that
awesome?
I understand this Hardanger, yes.
Fiddle, it's the center of actually both the storylines.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
What drew you to that particular instrument?
I really enjoyed visiting the Hardanger region in southwest Norway a few years ago. My husband and I had the pleasure of traveling there. And that area struck me as not only beautiful, but particularly rich in folk traditions. And one of those is certainly the Hardanger fiddle. That is now associated really with Norway, but we know the first Hardanger fiddle produced in that area dates back to the 1600s, so a very long tradition there. And they're beautiful instruments. They're stunningly gorgeous constructions. They have a haunting sound, wonderful, unique sound. But what also really intrigued me about the instruments is that in that part of Norway, and I'm sure in other parts as well, the fiddle played a key role in rural society. It was very deeply embedded in agricultural cycles and rituals and traditions. And a good fiddler was a revered member of any community. And he was able to mark every occasion with the proper tune. And for example, a Hardanger wedding, he didn't just have a wedding tune. He had tunes for every part of the whole ceremony, the procession to the church, the parties afterwards. If young men were drinking too much and he needed to calm things down, he had a tune for that. And so it was just such an important part of life. I wanted to showcase that a little bit.
So it wasn't so much the organ playing for a wedding, it was the fiddle.
Well, it was the fiddle until you got to the churchyard. Fiddles for many years were not permitted in churches. There was a time when religious, a certain group of religious zealots believed that fiddles were evil. They associated them with dancing and drinking and partying and all those things. But it got so extreme that many fiddles were actually destroyed and some fiddlers were persecuted. So even when things eased up a little bit, for many years, fiddle players would lead the wedding party to the church but wait outside.
Talking today with Kathleen Ernst, author of the Chloe Ellefson Mystery Series, and her latest is titled
Fiddling with Fate.
Fiddling with Fate. Join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. Maybe a question about her work in Norway, or maybe about fiddlers, or maybe just about the series itself. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, I was born in Stoughton.
I heard a rumor to that effect. So, what a wonderful town.
Stoughton was, I grew up on a farm, and Stoughton was the community where we went to for medical things, mm-hmm. and some for groceries, a bit of that as well. So I'm acquainted with Stoughton and its history, Norwegian history, but I'm sure there are a lot of people who may not be. What's Stoughton's? Talk about Stoughton's connection to Norway.
Stoughton has a very strong link to Norway. The town itself was not settled originally by Norwegians, so it's not only Norwegian
right.
people that live there. But a lot of Norwegian farmers, farm families came, and they found the wonderful fertile land around town just an ideal place to start their new lives in America. So many, many, many settlers there, which helped give Stoughton such a Norwegian identity that
right.
exists to this day. And one of the things that I find just fascinating about Stoughton, and certainly many, many other towns across Wisconsin, even though Norwegian heritage has become part of Stoughton's identity and a tourism phenomenon, when you spend time there, you get to know people who are very proud of their Norwegian roots. Their family has been there for generations. They're still involved with the Sons of Norway Lodge. They still bake traditional foods. It's wonderful to see those traditions still being celebrated and honored and preserved in an area like that.
And I was even, as you were talking, I was thinking about watching the high school dance group.
Oh, yes. The Stoughton Norwegian dancers are phenomenal. They're wonderful ambassadors, not only for Stoughton, but really for Wisconsin, because they do often travel outside of the state and occasionally even outside of the country. The group was started in the 1950s, and I had the pleasure when I was researching this book to meet with someone, Susan, who's become a friend of mine, who was one of the dancers in the 1950s. And so she had wonderful stories about how, the group's early years. But what is so special is that last May, I had a chance to see her granddaughter, who is a third generation dancer in the family, perform in Stoughton. And I find that very moving, actually. It touches me to think what Stoughton's original Norwegian ancestor or settlers, what they would think to know if they could have known that all these years later, young people would still be preserving their heritage and celebrating their heritage and sharing these traditions with others.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic,
yeah.
Actually. I don't think I have any Norwegian blood in me at all, but when you get to Stoughton, sometimes you want to hope you're.
You do. You do. I know. I don't either. But they've been very kind and welcoming to me anyway. Yes.
Oh, Kathleen Ernst, our guest today. It was really fun talking with her about her new book. It's called Fiddling with Fate. And that's the 10th, right?
10th in the series.
10th in the series. Been going on. She's been probably writing for longer than 10 years for those books.
I started the first book 17 years ago. So these Chloe and Ralkie have been in my psyche for quite a long time now.
And you were working on other things.
I was. I was under contract for a lot of other books. So if I had a little break, 6 weeks between one book contract and another, this was a project from my heart. It was what I really wanted to do. And I didn't know if it would find a publishing home. Happily, it did. So sometimes you just take a chance like that and follow your passion as a writer. And that's led me to book 10 in the Chloe series.
You can join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Dave Potratz, our engineer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with Kathleen Ernst. She is the author of the Chloe Ellefson Mystery Series and her latest book, as I said, called Fiddling with Fate. Join in with your own question. Have you read any of the Chloe Ellefson books? Love to hear from you and your comments on that, or maybe questions about this book. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Do you know who the victim's going to be before you start writing? Or what do you usually do?
And a lot of mystery authors would roll their eyes at that. I also usually don't know who the killer is when I start. I start thinking about where Chloe and Relke are emotionally in the journey they're going to go on. And I start by thinking about the place that I want to feature, places sometimes in the books, and what themes and stories I want to bring to the forefront. And then I work out the other details later.
Do you ever wish you'd pick somebody, a different victim? Or
No.
I bring that up because I was surprised at the victim in this book reasons and felt a little bad about it. And
yeah.
Be honest.
The victims are not always bad people, certainly, and it can be kind of poignant to lose them, which I think adds more impetus to the need to figure out who did this and why, to at least bring that kind of justice to the table.
Yeah, it was. Oh,
yeah.
Ouch. By the way, are you a dancer? Somebody wanted to know if you're a dancer yourself.
If I'm a dancer, I used to love folk dance, and I did study dance when I was in college. I haven't done much dancing in many, many years, so I am today an aficionado. I love to watch.
Well, we have some callers online. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. The other thing about it, and this kind of goes back to watching the Stoughton folks dancing, is the dress itself.
It's spectacular.
Yeah, and you have quite a bit of information about Norwegian dress.
Norway is known. Many countries have beautiful folk dress, and Norway is certainly known for that. And again, the Hardanger region, different regions have their own form of the cultural folk dress, bunad. But Hardanger is known for just a particularly beautiful attire traditionally, and so that's also become almost a national thing. Some people wear this beautiful version that originated in the Hardanger region. And I did a lot of work at the Hardanger Folk Museum in the little town of Utna in Norway, and spent some time with the director there, who was very generous with her time and knowledge. And that really helped me understand not only the traditions that are there, but what's special about that region is that in some other places, more urban places perhaps, some of these traditions faded away and then were brought back. But in this rural area, these traditions never died. So when Norway was emerging from domination by other countries and trying to figure out its national identity, a lot of people looked to places like the Hardanger region, where there hadn't been as much change over the years, to figure out what Norwegian culture and nationalistic pride really was all about.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Gretchen in Hinckley, Minnesota, we'll give you a chance now. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a question for you regarding kind of just what you're talking about, accuracy in telling about another culture or another country. I'm trying to do that myself in a story, but I'm possibly overly anxious about my accuracy.
Gretchen, I hear what you're saying, absolutely. And probably the hardest part of my job is approaching someone in a new area, in a new ethnic group, and saying, hi, I would really like to explore your culture. Will you help me? I turn to two different kinds of resources. First, if there are professional people in the area at a historic site or a museum, I would never write about a place if I didn't have their blessing to do so. And everyone that I've worked with, as I said, for example, at the Hardanger Folk Museum, so generous with their time and knowledge, and I really let what they tell me is important, not just information, but what stories they want to want to see told. I let that help guide my plot. And then it's also important to spend time, if you can find it, with the descendants themselves. I've met so many wonderful people all over Wisconsin and the Midwest who are quietly doing the good work of preserving their family stories or preserving their community history or their local ethnic history. And these people are such heroes, and I have such admiration for the work that they're doing. And they've always been very, very generous with their knowledge. So I wish you well on your project.
Gretchen? Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. One of the things that interested me about the book was just learning a little bit more about the history of Norway. For example, I had no history knowledge of, frankly, almost none of Norway, and I didn't realize they were kind of subservient to other countries for a while. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, they were under foreign rule for quite a while, and it went back and forth, and that's why people later were starting to wonder, well, how much influence has Denmark, has Sweden, have these other surrounding countries had on our culture? You know, during the years that other countries were in power there, they brought in some of their music and their traditions. And in the cities, you know, what became Norwegian culture? And it became very, very important after Norwegian independence to sort of reassert that and say, we are a nation ourselves. I'm not an expert on that, but that was one of the fascinating things that I learned about as well while working on this.
And we're not talking about a couple of years.
No, we're talking about hundreds of years. Hundreds of years. So you can imagine if the nationalists who really wanted to find and project a Norwegian national identity, how do you go about doing that after so many years?
Yeah, it's hard to understand how the difficulty actually doing that. So that was one thing that really interested me. And part of that, too, was you write it in there's a funeral that goes from way back in the history, and someone dies, and they couldn't have the funeral itself in the church.
Yeah, that was fascinating too. A lot of I think just status in a community, and the priest would come on Sunday and say a few words, but I had not known that either until I read about it and talked with some people there about it. And there were rituals, again, the fiddler mm-hmm. and the traditions and ale bowls being passed around and the toast to the dead. But in some cases, that was true. Everything was done in the churchyard.
Dave in Mercer, we'll go to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. My question is this. Do you need to read the books in order in the series in order to grasp all of the themes that are going on? Or can you just pick one book and read it and you'll be perfectly fine doing that?
Thank you, Dave. That is a great question. All of the books do work as standalones, and often people come into the series in the middle because a certain ethnic group or a location appeals to them. That said, there is an arc to the series. Chloe and Relke, the two main characters, they do grow and change. Their relationship grows and changes. And if you're the type of reader that's really important to you, then you should probably start at the beginning. But if you do start in the middle or even with Fiddling with Fate, you won't have any trouble.
Yeah. That's happened to me a number of times, Dave. I pick up a book and I read it, and then I like that book a lot, and then I thought, darn, I wish I'd read the... I started at the beginning, and then I go back to the beginning and then catch up mm-hmm. and just keep going that way. It is kind of fun to read them in order.
Some people are very, very faithful about that. They do not want to read the series out of order.
So yeah.
Whatever works for you.
Whatever works for you. If you're interested in this particular topic, for example, or Norway, mm-hmm. just go ahead. But I'd be tempted to go back.
Go back to the beginning.
I'd be tempted to go back to the beginning.
See how they got there, yes.
Oh, man. So talk a little bit more about some of the other characters that come into play here, because it's not only Chloe and Relke, but a lot of other players as well.
Well, One of the things that was interesting in this book, as you mentioned earlier, I do usually include a strand of historical fiction that I sort of braid with Chloe and Rilke's story. In this case, because it was personal for Chloe, that was very rewarding. And I went back a little earlier in time than I sometimes do. Mm-hmm. The first character is her, I think, four great-grandmothers, I believe.
Yeah.
Gudrun. And we only meet her briefly, and she's actually one of my favorite characters in the book. She's a very elderly, wise woman. She has knowledge of old ways that have come to her from her grandmothers and great-grandmothers of pre-Christian traditions. And she's sort of at that point in time where she can blend old ways and new, and she feels her responsibility as far as passing some of her knowledge along to, in the chapter in question, her granddaughter, but she's thinking ahead as well. So it was great fun for me to create her in my mind, and I'd love to do more with Gudrun one day.
Oh, yeah. Maybe, huh?
Maybe.
Well, one of her passions was, I think, holding on to land.
Yes, yeah. That was very important in this family. And we know from so many immigrants that land was precious. And this was very steep land. It was hard hard to farm. But if you had never had any land when they got their little patch, that was precious. And some of the women were were willing to, make sacrifices and make hard choices in order to keep that land for future generations.
And what were women's roles back then compared to in terms of maybe the land or just everyday life?
Women were very, very heavily involved in agriculture if they lived on farms. And with the land so steep and land so limited, most farms had more than one farm, actually. They had a summer farm with a building, and the women would take the goats and the cows and the sheep up to the higher pastures where they can get good grass in the height of the summer. And often they were alone there all summer, sometimes very young women, doing all the milking, all the churning, the cheese making, the butter making. And someone would come climb up. Dad would come maybe once a week and carry back down the butter and things. So they had a great deal of responsibility.
They did indeed. Wayne in Marshfield, let's go to you now. Thank you for calling, Wayne.
Good morning. I'm a blind reader and get books through the Library for the Blind. Within the last year or two, there was one of your books that was read on Chapter a Day. I'm wondering, and it fit very well, and I'm wondering who picks those books and if that's a possibility. And if the Library of Congress has any of yours in their system.
Oh, Wayne, thanks so much for calling. And I was as thrilled as you were when one of the Chloe books was chosen for Chapter a Day. That is not a choice I make. That's made here at the station by producers. The first three books are available on audio book also, and those can often be ordered through libraries if it's not in your system. I believe that some of the books have gone to the Library of Congress, but I'm not positive which titles, and so I don't want to tell you the wrong thing, but thank you for your question. I will find out.
Yeah, and there are probably some there,
mm-hmm.
but and there are at least the first three
are available, yeah, on audio.
What's that process like? I mean, you didn't read them yourself. I don't
No. And often, yeah, people often say, well, why don't you turn the rest of them into audiobooks? The way it works is a publishing company has the rights to create an audiobook available for sale, and a producer can purchase those rights and produce audiobooks. In this case, happily, this company picked up the first three books, but so far we haven't convinced them to go on. I hope they do. I get a lot of requests for audiobooks. I don't get to choose the narrator. I do try to be a little proactive. I was given her email, and so a few terms that I was afraid she might have trouble pronouncing, I said, just if it's helpful, here you go. But I missed a couple too that I should have told her, this is how you pronounce such and such. But so it goes. I was thrilled that they were brought to audio at all.
Oh, absolutely. And what was the whole process? As long as we're talking about books,
sure.
And getting audio books, but what about the whole book publishing process, like that first book? Okay.
Yeah. You know, sometimes a company approaches me and asks me to write a book and offers me a contract, and that's wonderful. And sometimes I write from the heart, like the Chloe series. So I wrote the first Chloe book, Old World Murder, not knowing at all if it would find a home. And I passed it on to my agent, and I started working on something else. And within a year, she'd found a home for the book with a mystery imprint called Midnight Ink. Mm-hmm. That they were located in the Twin Cities. It was a very nice fit, sort of a Midwestern mindset. And a lot of the people that worked there had actually grown up in Wisconsin, which was great fun.
So, and from there, then it's... They may pick a, that publisher may, or some other publisher then may.
Right, it's a very volatile business, and you never know. It's sales driven, obviously. I was thrilled that Midnight Ink chose to publish 10 books, which is a lot for a mystery series. Midnight Ink has actually closed. Mm-hmm. I learned this about a year ago, so this was my last book for them, which. Gave me pause, but it gave me a chance to sort of take a breath and step back and say, how do I feel about the series at this point after 10 books? And what I realized very, very quickly is that I'm not ready to say goodbye to Chloe and Ralky, and there are many more wonderful historic places and stories that I want to tell. So I can't give specifics about the future of the series, but I can tell readers that I am working on the 11th Chloe book right now.
Oh, okay. Well, and you have a wonderful website. Jill was saying, boy, Kathleen's... website is really good.
I do, and I think I have the best in the business, which I can say because I have a great deal of help from my husband and business partner, Scott, and I'm happy to give him a shout. We work together with all of this. This is our business, and he works very hard full-time and more on the website, on things like emails. Readers can't see, but Larry's looking at our new brochure that features the 10th book, which is beautifully and professionally done. And I am very, very grateful that I have a partner who is willing and able to help me do that. There's so much that goes into these stories that don't make it onto the page of the books themselves. And so we use the website as a place to get additional photos and stories and the stories behind the stories. And I think a lot of really readers really do enjoy having access to all that information.
And you've even done some, I don't know if tours is the right.
I have, which is great fun. Most recently, we did a special event at Heritage Hill, which was featured in the 9th Chloe Ellefson book at the Belgian farm. And we had readers come out and see the farm, and it was great fun. And for this book, we're planning something even just as special, if not more. I was thinking, you know, my readers love the history and heritage in these books so much. What would be better than letting them hear about that and learn about that from the people in Stoughton who are doing so much to preserve their history and heritage? So I'm delighted that I am partnering with the Sons of Norway Mant Lodge in Stoughton with help from the Stoughton Historical Society and the folks that run their wonderful museum. We have a very special event. I just announced there's information on my website. It's a ticketed event. On October 26th, and we're going to get to tour the museum, and we're going to have craft demonstrations, folk art demonstrations at the lodge. Wonderful fiddle player is going to come. A Norwegian dinner there at the lodge, and then I'm also going to give a program about sort of behind the scenes of the book. So that's a very special day we have planned.
Oh, yeah. By the way, the website address is?
KathleenErnst.com. Kathleen with a K.
Kathleen with a K and E-R.
N-S-T.
E-R-N-S-T. And you have some other events coming up that we should talk about. Mystery to Me, for example, in Madison.
We have a full slate this fall, and I'm very excited because what could be better than meeting readers in person? The official launch party for the event is at Mystery to Me in Madison next week, Tuesday, September 10th. And the day after that, I'm going to be visiting the Sons of Norway Lodge in Stoughton, Wisconsin, which I'm looking forward to. Those folks have been so generous with their time and their knowledge and their help. I'm also going to be at the Sons of Norway Lodge here in Madison later on. But we have lots and lots of bookstore events. The Fox Cities Books Festival, I'll be there. the special event in Stoughton on Saturday, October 26th. So I have a calendar page on my website. And if you're interested in seeing where we're going to be, just go to KathleenErnst.com and click on the calendar link and you'll find all the information.
One of the things that events that caught my eye was the one September 25th, where you'll be in North Dakota.
Yes, I am thrilled and honored. The largest Scandinavian gathering festival in North America is held every year in Minot, North Dakota, Hostfest, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And this year I am the featured author at Hostfest, which is really a thrill.
And it's just all things Norwegian?
All things Scandinavian,
all things
especially
Scandinavian.
Norwegian, but it's all things Scandinavian. Authors, concerts, music, folk art classes, everything you could imagine. So my husband Scott and I are very excited. We'll be there for the full festival.
Oh.
So if you're in the area or if you're planning to travel, the Hostfest is here. Please come see us.
And Orville called to remind people that the 17th of May is Norway's Constitution Day. It's Sittendemai.
Sittendemai, yes.
Sittendemai. And it's May 15th through the 17th in Stoughton. It's celebrated, I believe.
Well, thank you for that call. It is a very special event, certainly in Stoughton. Wonderful. And you can see Rosemulling, and you can see the dancers perform, and so many other things. And there are also Sittendemai celebrations in lots of smaller towns all over the state. In the southwestern part of the state, we have some wonderful communities that have a strong Norwegian tradition. So, yeah, it's a great thing to get out and enjoy.
But I think it's even the Stoughton one, they like to say, and I don't know if it's true or not, that their celebration is even bigger than the one in Norway.
You know, I don't know if it's true, but I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I mean, there's thousands and thousands
and
of people.
Everything you could imagine. Fiddle music and historical programs and Norwegian breeds of livestock and the dancing. It's just a fabulous event.
It is indeed. I've had
wonderful food
and Rosemulling.
Yes, exactly. Everything you could want.
I've visited it many a times, and my the one of the exciting times for my mother was when she bought a ticket and won a microwave oven.
Oh, my goodness. You just never know what's going to happen.
Kathleen, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Such a delight. Thank you so much.
Oh, her new book is called Fiddling with Fate. It's the 10th. The 11th, are you willing to say where you might be going next?
It's a little too early for that. I know, but it's kind of fragile, and I like to wait till I get a little farther down the line.
Okay, well, you let me know.
I will. I promise.
Right. Kathleen Ernst, she'll be back probably with book number 11, and we'll talk with her again. In the meantime, you can get a copy of any of her books, and you can order those any bookstore, I think, Wisconsin.
Any bookstore, they either have them or they can order them for you. Lots of wonderful independent bookstores.
And do they do online ordering through your site or not?
We usually send people to one of the indies like Mystery to Me, who does mail order. It's very easy. So call Mystery to Me, look them up on the web, and they will get a book in your hands, and I can sign it before it goes in the mail.
Yeah, and all the local bookstores.
They're fabulous.
They are fabulous.
They do so much for readers and communities and authors.
Well, on the fiddle music, isn't that nice? Let's listen to that for a second here as we turn our attention. There'll be some music played coming up here. It already started. The football season has started, for example. And there's going to be a lot of On Wisconsin and that kind of music, not maybe so much the fiddle music. And we'll talk about next tailgating and other outdoor grilling activities with our two grillologists, Mad Dog and Merrill. That coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.